She is a single 20-something Christian Republican writer and blogger, the daughter of a senator and 2008 Republican presidential nominee. He is a married 40-year-old gun-fearing atheist Democrat comedian, the son of a lesbian former Social Security employee. Meghan McCain and Michael Ian Black barely knew each other, but they went about to change the way politics is discussed in America, and they did it in an RV. They have written a book about their experience. It's called America, You Sexy Bitch, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Meghan McCain and Michael Ian Black to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Michael, how did this come about?
Whimsy. I would say it came about through whimsy.
Whimsy.
I was on Twitter one night. Yeah, whimsy, as these things often do. I was on Twitter one night and saw that Meghan was on Twitter and with a burst of creative genius tweeted her and said, we should write a book together. And she said yes.
And why did you so easily take that invitation to heart, Meghan?
I didn't at first. I thought maybe he was joking or it was just kind of like, you know, people say stuff all the time that sounds crazy. And when we started talking and emailing back and forth, we came up with this idea to go on the road together. And I thought it sounded really fun and interesting. And it was sort of came at exactly the right time for both of us in our lives. And we had the time. We had both had like a month free where we could do it. And, you know, the stars kind of aligned for the project.
The idea was to start in California to end in Connecticut, and what did you want to achieve? Were there rules that you set in place at the very beginning, Michael?
Well, there were no real rules other than we couldn't leave. I mean, we had to finish the trip. And there were many times where I think both of us wanted to leave. But what we were trying to do was just try to figure out how to have a conversation, try to figure out how two people from diametrically opposed political backgrounds could get along and have fun and not kill each other. And we mostly succeeded.
I think that it's interesting because, and we'll get into where the two of you disagree here in a moment, but there are many things, Meghan, that the two of you do agree on.
There's a few things that we agree on. I mean, basic things like that we want America to be great and we want politicians to start working together, and you know, we both believe in the American dream. I mean, things like that we believe in, and we're both fiscally conservative. But beyond that, how we think America will continue to be great and which policies will get us there, we completely diverge on.
I don't know that I'm fiscally conservative. I'm fiscally more conservative.
He's
than
not fiscally that, conservative at
you
all.
Are more fiscally conservative than
he
me.
He wants to spend us into more
oblivion.
Debt. And
yes. I just want to keep
my grandchildren.
Yes, I want to keep borrowing money from China indefinitely.
It seems that the main, if there is a main issue of debate, or certainly one that the two of you are extremely passionate about, and opposing views, is over health care.
Yeah, that's one that we just couldn't find common ground on.
Good Lord, we don't agree with that.
Megan's position is that we should let people die in the streets.
Exactly. Let everybody die. That's how I feel.
And the book comes out almost to the moment of the Supreme Court decision, so I assume that just rubs more salt in the wounds that you already had over this issue.
The ironic timing, the fact that this book came out when the Supreme Court decision was being made, and it was such a point of contention between us on the road. Obviously, we saw the poetic irony in that. Literally, it's the easiest way to make us start arguing. And we have absolutely no common ground whatsoever when it comes to health care.
Does that speak to the complexity of the debate, do you think?
I think so. I think it actually speaks to something more, even more fundamental than just the debate about health care. It speaks to sort of inherent tensions that exist in the way our country is set up, because it cuts to the quick of how we want to define our government, whether we think
Michael likes his handheld and all decisions made by the U.S. government, and Michael agrees with President Obama that all success that was ever his at any point in time, his stand-up, everything, the government actually wrote Michael's stand-up for him, and all success is due to the government. And I believe in living or dying, and individualism and small government and fiscal responsibility and being an American and taking accountability for my own actions. Those are things that I believe in.
Megan has characterized my position perfectly.
Like, it was like my stand-up act President Obama wrote for me.
Actually, President Bush wrote a lot of people's stand-up act.
I was about to say, I think.
Oh, touche. Oh, my gosh. So funny.
I am. I'm a professional comedian.
When you look at these issues, though, do you get a sense that two people with opposing viewpoints can get along and have a dialogue that isn't so based in hatred, so that maybe something can get done?
Yeah, I think the dialogue can take place. You just have to want to make the effort, and you have to want to compromise. All of that being said, there are several issues that Michael and I could not find anything that we agreed on at all. And I don't know what that says about maybe just politics right now, or just the extreme differences that I think are being shown about what being a Republican and what being a Democrat really means. But I think you can find compromise in places, but I'm not going to say it's easy, because I know we had a difficult time.
But more importantly, at the end of the day, we may disagree about a host of issues.
Right.
But the one thing that we didn't do was demonize each other about it. I never said, you know, Megan's a bad person because of that, and she never said I was. I mean, secretly I thought it, yes, but I never said it, and that's the important thing.
I mean, in the sense of that one of you may like salmon, the other one may not, but at the end of the day, you can still have dinner, right?
Of course, and it seems like a lot of the frustration that we heard from people across the country is that it seems like our political leaders can't get into a room together and can't communicate the way Megan or I can communicate, or you and I can communicate, or just people in their daily lives can communicate. We can have conversations without being enemies, and that's, I think, the frustration that people are really expressing to us, is that they don't understand why this kind of compromise, that all of us make compromises on a day-to-day basis, but why our political leaders can't seem to do that.
When it comes to the news, I mean, you may have your opinions, but when you were on the road and something breaks, and you just take this case of the shooting in Aurora, Colorado, so that then presents itself allows you to have a conversation of how you feel on a host of issues, doesn't it?
It does, as it does in households all over the country. I mean, these things happen, and suddenly all these issues are brought to the fore once again. And one of the things that Megan and I really tried to accomplish with this book wasn't so much to preach to each other or try to convince the other person, but more importantly, just to listen, just to hear what the other person had to say. And, you know, in times like this, during national tragedies, of course, we all have our opinions and we all want to be proven right in some capacity. But I think more important is just to hear and just to listen and just to be there for each other.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think when things like the awful tragedy that just happened occurs, you kind of come together as Americans in different ways. And I find it, one thing I found particularly sort of gross was when people on the news were trying to figure out whether or not this killer was a Democrat or a Republican. It's not about that. He's a psychopath that, you know, they need to really get to the deep root of issues. And I think that's what's wrong with the media right now, is automatically even something like this horrific incident is becoming politicized.
Oh, immediately it becomes politicized.
Mm.
It immediately becomes viewed through the lens of how is this going to impact my guy politically. And I agree with Megan.
I just couldn't believe the discussion of whether or not he was a Democrat or Republican is even taking place. This is obviously someone who's not mentally sound to make any kind of decisions.
Right.
He's obviously, you know, literally a homicidal maniac. So, I don't know. I just couldn't believe that was a discussion that was being had.
But,
well, and it does speak to sort of the larger problem that I think a lot of people have with the media in general, which is you've got all these stations and all this time to fill, and of course they're just going to grasp at whatever they can just to fill air.
How do the two of you come down on media and media coverage? I mean, Megan, certainly you've been in that fishbowl.
Yeah, you know, I work for the media. I mean, I work for
right.
Newsweek, Daily Beast, and I'm an MSNBC contributor, so I can't be... I think that the media has a lot of problems right now, and that it can be too swayed and too biased, and I don't think the 24-hour news cycle is doing great things. All of that being said, I actually like the role the internet and websites like Reddit are playing when it comes to the news. I mean, this, again, this psycho killer in Colorado, his adult friend finder, Match.com websites were found through users on Reddit. I mean, it's an interesting thing that he was, like, weird enough to have this really, like, creepy profile on adult friend finder. And I just think the media has a lot of problems, and that is what has spawned sort of, like, people taking things into their own hands on the internet.
And, Michael, what do you think about the of how you deal with the media?
You know, in general, I think the media does get a bad rap. Some of it deserved, some of it not. I do think that there's a lot of people out there trying to do good work, trying to tell stories in a responsible way. And I think there's a lot of people who do the opposite of that, who try to exploit situations for their own personal gain and glory. I think any industry has its good seeds and its bad seeds, and I think the media is no different.
And I think it depends what element of the media we're talking about. If we're talking about cable news, that's obviously different than talking about, like, you know, just strict journalism, just the facts.
Right.
Because I think, unfortunately, in today's age, you have to really delineate between the two things. Because one, I consider much more entertainment than I do news.
Yeah. And unfortunately, though, I think a lot of viewers don't distinguish between the two. They, a lot of us, myself included, don't always know where the journalism ends and the advocacy begins.
Yeah.
The name of the book is America, You Sexy Bitch. It is published by DaCapo. You mentioned at the very beginning that there were moments where you were ready to give up the trip. What brought you to those points?
Healthcare.
Yeah. Healthcare. I mean, we got into fights about all kinds of things.
The war in Iraq and Afghanistan.
The weight of Megan's suitcase. I mean, we got into all kinds of fights.
It was just personal things, too, just getting to know each other, and Michael sort of pushing my buttons and not realizing he was pushing my buttons, and us not understanding each other, communicating. I mean, we were strangers before we went on the road, and you know, I give us big props for not bailing out and, you know, leaving. My friends had bets that I didn't know about till I came back. They had up to $500 whether or not I would come trekking back early or not. I know, which is... And I was
now,
like,
that I know you better, yeah. I'm surprised you didn't.
Really? Yeah. No, I mean, when I commit, I commit. Like, whatever. But there were moments where I was like, I'm going to leave his butt on the side of the road. Let's get out of here. Leave Michael. He'll figure it out. We'll just do some stand-up, make his way home.
Just pay for a bus ticket, yeah.
Hitch back.
Make his way home.
And, you know, I was curious, I was lucky enough to see the two of you at a book event in Bryant Park a bit ago as the book tour began, and it was very enjoyable. It was a beautiful day, and you're in Bryant Park, and you're talking about this issue. And Megan, your mom was there, and it was it was very fun to see. And I'm curious as to what both your parents' reaction was to this tour and to the discussion, because as we see in the book, Michael, you got in on this and met the family as well.
Well, both of my parents, when this idea first arose, and again, the conception of this idea and then execution was literally like 6 weeks. So my mom was very hesitant. She's like, what exactly are you doing and why? But then she met Michael when I brought him home to Arizona, and she now adores Michael. And I get annoyed because I'll say something and she'll find it offensive. But if Michael says something, she's like, oh, it's just Michael being Michael. He's so crazy. So funny. So he has totally won my mom over. And my dad, the same thing. He didn't really understand why I was working with a comedian, why I was choosing to expose myself to a stranger. But he has also come around and really enjoyed the book, and I think has, you know, understands why we did it and liked it. And, you know, it just took both of them coming around, but it has helped that my brothers and my mother like Michael so much.
What was it like for you?
And I like them.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what was it like for you to meet the family?
So weird.
I know.
So weird to, like, you know, hang out with the McCain family, this sort of iconic American family. and to find out that they're just kind of people like everybody else, you know, and they're cool, and we have a lot of fun together.
Now my mom's, like, inviting Michael to come back to our cabin. She's like, bring your family. We'll barbecue. It'll be so nice. I'm like, when did this happen? Trust me, Mom. I spent a lot of time with Michael. You don't want him hanging out at our house all the time with his kids.
I'm a wonderful house guest.
Is she trying to fix you up with a married guy?
No.
Me? No, no. He was talking about bringing his wife and children as well.
Well, yeah. Which just sounds
things are going to get crazy in the desert, Joe.
Michael's wife and children.
Yeah.
No, I think my mom kind of thinks of him as like... I don't know.
Extended family.
Yeah,
now.
Like family. I don't know. It's not like that at all.
Well, I have to say that after watching the two of you again, just spending a very limited amount of time watching the two of you go back and forth, it seems like a very brother-sister relationship.
Very brother-sister, very Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough. Like, people always like sort of are like, oh, there's tension between them. And I think when you just have a public personality chemistry and it's a man and a woman, people are automatically just going to like go there. I just say it's some combination of brother, sister, Mika, and Joe.
Yeah, it's more like kids in the backseat of a car. That's more of our relationship.
Yeah.
We just need the adults in front telling us to shut up.
I know. This car around, Michael and Megan.
and Michael, for you, I mean, you bring this up and you talk about it, and I've heard you speak about this, where there is also, it can't be understated that there is an economic divide between the two of you as well that I'm sure played a role in the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, Megan will be the first person to admit that she comes from a privileged background, and I will be the first person to admit that I resent her for having come from a privileged background, because I don't.
Michael lives in the suburbs in a giant mansion and drives a BMW, so for him to, like, sit in a
I do not live in a giant mansion.
He lives in a giant mansion.
I live
been there.
In a McMansion.
I've been to his house.
I live in
it's
a junior
huge.
Mansion.
It's enormous. It is enormous. I'm not joking. Like,
I'm the perfect Republican, Megan.
No,
I'm a self-made
for him
man.
To, like, sit there and act like you're like living in poverty, and like I'm sitting here in my, you know, ivory tower.
But your background,
ridiculous.
Michael, was modest. You're saying,
yeah. God forbid my grandparents and my parents worked hard to achieve the American dream. Now, you know what we do with the American dream? We demagogue that success in America. Everybody must look down on it now. Ridiculous.
I think what Megan is trying to say is that she's very proud of me for having risen from modest means to achieve the American dream. It's true, though. We do come from very different backgrounds, and I do think that that informs our politics.
I graduated college. He didn't.
So not only are you richer, you're smarter.
I'm smarter.
Right, but she's a graduate, and I'm a dropout.
Yeah. I went to an Ivy League school. He didn't. Dropped out as freshman year.
And yet, look at us. We're in the exact same studio talking to you at the exact same time. So joke's on you, Megan.
We're in the exact same place. You are 15 years older than me.
Oh, there you go.
Did you hear that?
Ouch.
Yeah, a little bit. Right.
Michael's about to turn the big 4-1.
Don't be quiet.
There's nothing wrong with that, Megan. From the big 4-3, nothing wrong with that. So when you, at the end of the day, When you have written the book, do you feel that you have accomplished something about the way that we should and the way we do speak to each other about our politics and about our culture and about how we live in this world that we are stewards of?
I hope that if the book informs people of anything, it's that we can have these conversations. We can talk about politics. It doesn't need to be this grim business. I mean, you hear how Megan and I talk. I mean, we just, you know, we bust on each other all day long. But we're also able to have these conversations, and we're able to disagree. And at the end, and when we're done disagreeing, go back to busting on each other and having fun. We're not. Neither of us are legislators. Neither of us has a plan to save the world or save America. But what we do have is respect for each other. And I hope that if the book does anything, it's that it starts to move the conversation forward so that people can hang out and barbecue and get drunk and have fun and still be serious when they need to be.
And your goal in this, Megan?
I wanted to...
She wants to just find a man exactly like me.
Oh my God.
That's her goal.
Lord have mercy. Gosh.
She wants to find a good liberal atheist like me.
Just younger.
I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. You know, the purpose of this book, I'm always trying to get young people interested in the political process because I speak with college students all year. I do speaking tours, and a lot of times you talk to college students, and they're so disenchanted from the process, and they feel so alienated, and they think that their voice isn't relevant. And I think part of the problem is the politicians and the Beltway and the media can act very elitist about the process and everything that goes on in America, and I'm just always trying to make it more accessible. So writing a campy, silly book that also tackles serious issues with a comedian was my goal, was just to continue to try and make this crazy process we call American politics fun and accessible for young people.
Well, and that is a great point to make, because there are some really serious issues discussed, but at the end of the day, it's also a very fun and informative read. And again, it's America, You Sexy Bitch, A Love Letter to Freedom. It's published by DeCapo. Michael Ian Black and Megan McCain, a great pleasure to have you both on the program. Best of luck in your future travels.
Thanks, Joe. I really
appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, America, You Sexy Bitch, A Love Letter to Freedom. It's published by DeCapo. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.